The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
We are inching closer and closer to full-fledged football season here in the great state of Arizona. High school has kicked off. U of A has kicked off. ASU about to kick off their season in the Cardinals. Just one more week of preseason, guys. We are almost there, right into the thick of it, and maybe cooler temperatures. We don't know. Pumpkin spice lattes came out yesterday. A good friend of mine, Elaine Emerson, up in Vegas, had three of them yesterday. It's what, supposed to be 110 today? Listen, you do you. That sounds awful to me right now. The whole pumpkin spice flavor, the heat, all of it. No. No, thank you. I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy, Brad Sesmatt, as he is working his way back from double knee replacement. Have a lot to get to on this very show. We're going to have Justin Spears, Arizona Daily Star, ESPN Tucson. This guy is everywhere in southern Arizona, covering the Wildcats extensively, the high school sports as well down there. Going to talk to him about the state of U of A, how after that incredibly tough loss to Hawaii, how the program is, where the coaching staff's mentality is, that sort of thing, as well as a couple of want to see what the high school scene is like down there. I've jumped on there on his show quite a few times, and he given my perspective on the Sal Points, the Canyon Del Oros. Want to get his perspective, definitely. He is the expert down there. I'm also going to play the interview between Luke Lipinski and Mike Jarecki. Luke was our host for the Brad Sesmatt's Football AZ show this week on Fox Sports Arizona. That is playing right now throughout the week, and him and Jarecki, MJ, able to sit down, talk about the Cardinals, where they're at right now as they inch closer and closer to the regular season. So going to have both of those on. Very excited to talk to them. Also going to cover some of the D-backs, Phoenix Rising, and the state of the NFL and these players who are now becoming more and more outspoken about where they're at mentally and the grind that football really does have on them. We're going to jump into that at the 10:20. Segments. So a lot to get to. Let's get to it right now. This is your rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And with the Arizona Diamondbacks, they got a look. All of these are going to be big wins moving forward. Every game is going to get more and more important as we inch closer and closer to the end of September. As the Diamondbacks are still hanging around, I think, is a fair assessment of where they're at in the playoff hunt right now. Four games out of the wild card, have quite a few games against these teams that they'll be playing and are looking up at for the National League wild cards. As it stands right now, Washington and the Chicago Cubs are the two wild card teams. Washington really starting to pull away, three games up on where the Cubs are at currently, and then behind them, the Phillies, the Mets, Milwaukee, and then Arizona at four games back. So pretty much Diamondbacks looking up at the National League East, or a big chunk of it at least right now. Really impressive for the National League East. You have Atlanta doing what they're doing, and they have this young crew coming up. And then you have Washington, Philly, and the Mets coming through. And then, if the Marlins could really ever get their act together, they could certainly be in the mix as well. But crazy to think that they also had one of the best outfields in baseball, and the best outfielder from that outfield was probably one few were thinking of. I think a lot of people would have pegged Giancarlo Stanton the best player in that. I think it's fair to say it's Christian Yelich. But Yelich, Ozuna, and Giancarlo Stanton just a couple years ago. And then they're in Rebuild City right now. But so back to the Diamondbacks. You look at what they were able to do yesterday on the road. I say it time and again when it is you're playing the San Francisco Giants at Oracle Park, formerly AT&T, it's always just a tough game there. No matter how bad they are, no matter how good they are, it's always just a weird game. Not a lot of runs come across at that ballpark. You have the fog kind of rolling in and out. You have the seagulls and all of that. And it's just a tough place to play, no matter where they're at. And what we've seen out of Mike Leake so far in a Diamondbacks uniform has not been good. It's been very bad. He had an ERA of 8.1 with the club entering last night. But what he was able to do, he went 7 1/3, gave up 4 hits, 2 earned runs, hit a batter, walked 1, struck out 2. And that this felt like a 2017 Diamondbacks win, especially in the second half of the season, where at that time the runs weren't really coming across. And that was a time when, J.D. Martinez had started to make his way over to Arizona and show what he can do. But especially prior to that trade in the second half, they were struggling offensively. They had to rely on the defense. They had to rely on starting pitching, getting 21 outs. Remember how much Torey Lovello preached that in his first couple years here. I want to get the starting pitchers to the 21-out mark. Now, he hasn't really talked about that much this year, and I think it's because the pitching staff was a little bit thinner going into the year than it had been in previous years. But that's what Mike Leake gave you, going 7 1/3. And for four hits, really two of those, if you watch the game, two of those the batters hit against the shift. So in that case, the analytics kind of bit the Diamondbacks, and that's going to happen more and more as the shift becomes more and more prevalent. But there was an RBI single that came through early on in the game, and that would have been a typical ground out to the shortstop. But it just the way the guys were positioned, they were playing the numbers, and look, it's now a part of baseball, whether you like it or not. But I think you can't say enough about this performance that he had. So you had the starting pitching aspect. You then had, in a tight ball game, a 3-2 ball game, T.J. McFarland came in, gave up a double, and that scored a run to make it 3-2. And Leake was on the hook for that one. But then Kevin Ginkle comes in, able to get some big outs, and that was spurred on by a big double play line drive in the infield, gets caught, thrown to first, doubled up, boom, all of a sudden they're out of it. And that just felt so much like 2017. And then you have Archie Bradley come in, shut the door, nothing really doing there in the ninth. That is what this team hasn't. I haven't really felt many of those type of wins. They've had plenty of close games. They've had plenty of games where they hang up a very crooked number. The offense has been, I think, really good this year, and it's been really good across baseball. But especially late in the year, when you're trying to just grind out wins, that game could have gone sideways for them very quickly. But Mike Leake got his feet under him, and that's why it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Mike Leake here moving forward, not just this year, but next year. Because I think that was a big draw to trading for him, because he's not just a rental. He's a guy that you're going to have for a year plus now. So if he's able to pitch like that, and I know that's kind of the top end of Mike Leake. We've seen more of the bottom end of him in the... That was very strange phrasing. Gonna avoid that, Devin. We'll just keep moving. We've seen the lower end of his play. Well, there we go. With what he's been able to do in the Diamondbacks uniform, he's somewhere in the middle consistently. You can kind of chalk it up to around an ERA around 4, maybe a touch above. We'll get you throughout, through 5-6 innings and kind of take care of things. Give up some hits, get a couple strikeouts here and there, but he's pitching now more to contact, and with the velocity going down, he's trying to keep it on the ground. And I think he did a tremendous job with that in this last start. So Diamondbacks, again, 4 games out of where the wild card, but they suffered a big loss in David Peralta. He made a trip just a couple days ago for the third time to the IL for an AC joint in his right shoulder. That is third time he's been there. He opts for surgery, and so his season is over. On the field, he has struggled recently, but he's a big guy in the clubhouse, a big guy, just culture-wise. Can keep guys positive, always has a lot of fun out there, still brings really good defense. But when you look at his first half versus second half, he hit .289. He slashed .289, .353, .476 first half of the year with 9 home runs, 44 RBI. after the All-Star break, 227, 313, 409 in just 88 at-bats. So he's struggled mightily, and I think a big part of that is due to the injury. I think it's wise for him just to, look, let's just cut bait. You know, you're pretty much banging your head against a wall when this is the third time you've had to go to the IL, and maybe you rushed back the first time, but clearly it's a bigger issue. So get it done now. Get ready for the 2020 season and see where you go from there. He's been very good up at the top of the lineup. He, as a leadoff hitter over the years, a two hitter, you know, anywhere 3 to 5, he can play all over the place in the field, in the lineup. It's going to be a big loss for them. But I think that overall, this is the right move. And this is where now we've seen Adam Jones have less of a role over the past couple of months. Obviously, his role is going to expand. We've seen Tim LoCastro come up and down from the minors and majors, and he's going to have to step up as well. You know, Jerod Dyson has been playing a lot more. The outfield depth might be tested a little bit here, but the versatility that Ketel Marte has brought, and again, I think the important thing with Ketel Marte moving to the outfield this year, it is now, when Adam Jones got signed, it was now no longer a necessity for him to play there, but a luxury. And that's a huge difference when a guy is getting used to a new position. It's not, we don't have anyone else there to play that position. It's, yeah, let's work him in. And I think the Ketel Marte outfield experience experiment has been a very good one. And just adds that much more versatility. And if we know one thing, it's Mike Hazen and Torey Lovello love versatility. So it'll be interesting to see how the chess match goes over the next couple of weeks, how they adjust to having David Peralta out of the lineup. They've become more and more used to it because he's had to be on the IL more and more. So it might not be that much of a change, but now we just know the Diamondbacks won't have him for the rest of the year. So interesting stuff with that. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the NFL, where they're at in their mental health, the state of it overall, with Andrew Luck, Rob Gronkowski speaking out, an Arizona Cardinal really stepped up and talked a lot about it yesterday after practice at the Cardinals facility. So we're going to go through that and kind of dissect that a little bit coming up next here on the Brad Sussmat Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sussmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. So on the NFL front, the past couple of days, we've seen two of its biggest stars talk about their mental health, what players go through day in and day out for just going through the grind of an NFL season, but also what happens when you're injured and how much your psyche is affected. And I don't think it's any secret that there is a lot of emotion that comes with that, and a lot of I think unsaid things that guys struggle with. And I feel like more and more players are starting to talk about it, and that is a good thing. And it got to the point even yesterday with the Arizona Cardinals where Justin Pugh kind of called out reporters and said, you guys don't want to talk about this part. You want to talk about who's going to be the fourth right tackle for us, you know, moving forward and that sort of thing. Here's what he said after practice yesterday. And I encourage you guys to go to the Cardinals, the ArizonaCardinals.com or AZCardinals.com, and watch the video too, because these quotes are powerful, but watching him say it in video form and show his emotion. And he's a fun-loving guy. He loves goofing off. He got very serious in this moment. I think that really enhances what he was talking about. But so he says, you guys don't want to talk about what's next for NFL players. You just want to talk about what's coming up with the opponent. No one's worried about the mental health of our guys. We've got Rob Gronkowski crying on ESPN. You guys don't want to talk about that. He then continues, the mental side of the NFL has been ignored for so long. I bet you if you go on the Twitter world, you're going to see all these guys saying Andrew Luck is soft or Andrew Luck is this and that. Those same guys have their friends killing themselves right now. Guys in the NFL, instead of dealing with these issues, are killing themselves. So we obviously have to have a conversation about it, because if we can't be forward, then those things are going to continue to happen. So pretty powerful words, and he says much more about just the state of it. And, you know, he talked about players moving forward once they are retired or forced to retire or going through injury. And one thing, you know, he talked about struggling. He's been no stranger to injury. He's had a lot of back issues of what it's like to kind of navigate that. And I don't think many people understand. I know I don't fully understand it, and I'm around athletes all the time, but trying to understand what it's like to be in the day-to-day, in the thick of it every single day, and then you get hurt, and then all of a sudden you're off to the side rehabbing, a lot of times on your own. And that's one thing with Steven Souza when he had that horrific injury this spring. One of the things he said was, like, I need to be around here because I need to see my teammates. I need to see my guys. It's a very lonely place. And when you look at Andrew Luck and Rob Gronkowski both talking about those issues, like, you could not pick two more different human beings than Andrew Luck and Rob Gronkowski. Really, the only thing they have in common is they're elite NFL players. But you look at Andrew Luck, and he has, you know, the reputation for being a very intellectual person, went to Stanford. He has that whole reputation, got, what, an architecture degree, very analytical. And then on the left, I think the image of Rob Gronkowski to many people is the Hulk. You know, a guy who, you know, you all saw the video of him after the Super Bowls, the various Super Bowls, of him shirtless and, you know, the Gronk cruise and going on Shark Tank and, you know, this fun-loving guy. But these are two very different people saying the same thing. There's a huge issue right now with the mental health of athletes. And it's a very good thing that this conversation is now starting. Kevin Love, you know, what, in the last year, made it very clear what he was struggling with and the grind. And I know there are going to be a lot of people that say, oh, poor multimillion-dollar athletes. But you don't know what their life's like. And I think that if, you know, if you were struggling with someone with something and someone came to you and said, oh, you're struggling. Oh, look at this house you're in. Look at this. Look at that. Look at, you know, all that stuff. Like, you never really know. And that's, I think, just the really interesting thing with where this conversation is starting to go. And it is. It's incredibly important to have this because he's right. There have been players that have committed suicide because they weren't able to properly take care of themselves or find the right help, or and it might be because they were too ashamed to admit it, or, you know, whatever it may be. There are a lot of different factors here. But having that conversation, I don't see how there can be a negative to what's going on in sports right now, where the conversation is now shifting to more of the look at this player, he's on my fantasy team, this is how it affects it, this is a collection of numbers, to this is a human being. And I know that sometimes in football that can be kind of hard to recognize because guys are in helmets and pads and you don't really see a lot of their true bodies, their true selves, really, because they do look like gladiators out there. And it's something that I think about consistently covering this sport a lot on the recruiting level, on the college level, on the pro level. You know, what questions can we ask as a company? What questions can the media ask to help spur that conversation on? You know, it's not just on the player's end or the coach's end, but it's certainly taking a step in the right direction because 5 years ago, it wasn't really happening. Guys would have, you know, potentially mental breaks and that sort of thing, and it would just be kind of like, oh yeah, he's dealing with some stuff. He's good. Now they're going into the nitty gritty, and not just the guys who get injured or the guys who are struggling, but some of the top players at their positions, who may be up at the top of their game, the top of the mountain, are dealing with issues. So it's a complex conversation. It's not a conversation that we can have in a 12-minute segment. But I'm happy to see that, first off, I hope Andrew Luck and Rob Gronkowski find peace in life after football, and that this was the right decision for them, and that they're able to transition out properly. Because that's another thing that Justin Pugh talked about, was your entire lives as a football player, you are told where to go, at what time, with who, wearing what, And then all of a sudden, you get out, whether it's by your decision or not. And then all of a sudden, you have this whole wide world in front of you. And all the structure is now gone. And that can be an incredible transition, I imagine. And not incredible in a good way. A overwhelming transition. It looks like Luck and Gronkowski are taking care of themselves. I'm glad Justin Pugh has been able to speak out, and it's a conversation that I think we need to certainly continue. So interesting stuff there. We're certainly going to have to keep an eye on that and see how it transforms across the entire sports landscape, not just football and not just the NFL. So coming up next, we have Justin Spears, Arizona Daily Star, ESPN Tucson. This guy is everywhere in Southern Arizona, also one of my good buddies. We're going to catch up with him about U of A football, also some high schools and high school players to keep an eye on in Southern Arizona. That's coming up next on the Brad Sussmat Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sussmat Show. Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy, and we are now joined by Justin Spears, ESPN Tucson, Arizona Daily Star. This guy is everywhere and anywhere in Southern Arizona, covering anything from U of A, really across the board, to the high school sports and everything in between. So always good to have my good buddy Justin Spears on. Justin, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Jordan. You know I always got you.
So we were just in a segment kind of talking about the state of NFL mental health. And Rob Gronkowski, one of those guys that really has spoken out recently about the struggles that he has had, just being a U of A alum and a guy who's had a lot of success at the NFL level. Just what was your initial reaction to what Gronkowski was saying the past couple of days?
My first reaction was, wow, this is coincidental timing, considering, you know, days ago, Andrew Luck retired from the NFL at the same age, at 29 years old. Looking at Rob Gronkowski, when I say shocked, I mean, I really was shocked, because you know this, Jordan, when you think of Rob Gronkowski, you don't think of him getting emotional. I can't recall the time where I've seen Rob Gronkowski start to cry, you know, sad tears. And, he's always been a happy-go-lucky guy. His personality is contagious. And, seeing Rob Gronkowski, you know, reflect on the injury, not just all the surgeries that he's gone through, but, you know, that one specific injury, the quad injury that he suffered in, you know, the last Super Bowl. And he said, I couldn't even get any sleep. I got maybe 5 minutes of sleep. Other than that, I was crying the entire night because I was just in so much pain. And after winning a Super Bowl, you shouldn't have a night like that. When you think of a sleepless night after a Super Bowl, you think of adrenaline because you're so happy that you won a Super Bowl. Not many people get to do that. Instead, he was in so much pain that he wasn't even happy about winning the Super Bowl. He was just, like I said, he was just in so much pain. So to see Rob Gronkowski speak up, you know, days after Andrew Luck retired from the NFL, I think this is really sending a message to the league and everyone who likes football, because you notice the only ones that are criticizing guys like Andrew Luck are people that haven't really played it down in the NFL. Other than that, you see former players, you see current players applauding Andrew Luck, applauding guys like Rob Gronkowski. So it's just a really interesting time to be a football fan right now.
There is no real not awkward way to transition from this to what's happening on the field. So we're just going to transition the U of A. What's kind of just been what's the vibe been around the campus and really the program here the last couple of days after a tough loss to Hawaii?
You know, Arizona football fans, they're not the ones to call for someone's job. I don't remember them calling for Rich Rodriguez's job, because Rich Rod took them to bowl games. He won 7 or 8 games and took them to a bowl game. And people aren't calling for Kevin Sumlin's job because Kevin Sumlin's in year two. So he gets the benefit of the doubt, absolutely. Now, with that being said, someone on his staff has been at Arizona for 4 years, or going on 4 years, and that's defensive coordinator Marcel Yates. I mean, Arizona football fans, they are so disgusted from what they've seen out of the defense over the last few years. I mean, you give up 595 yards to Hawaii, and it's no disrespect to Hawaii, but you can't give up 595 yards to a group of five opponent. You just can't do that. So fans are kind of, you know, rallying around, and they created a website called FireMarcelYates.com. Marcel Yates, you know, like I said, he's been here for the last few years, and, you know, while he's added, you know, guys like Colin Schooler, you know, he's had Jace Whitaker there all this time, and he's added great pieces, individual pieces to the defense, but for some reason as a unit, they're just so bad, and fans are really upset right now, more so with the defense. I did like what I saw out of Khalil Tate, you know, his first 300-yard passing game, 100-yard rushing game in his career at Arizona. Did he need to polish up some things? Absolutely. But fans right now are not happy. And going into a bye week, they really needed that win. Instead, they got to sit on this L for a couple weeks.
With the defense, you know, you kind of mentioned Marcel Yates has done a very good job recruiting since he got to Tucson. Do you think the issue with where the defense is at right now, is it more of a development issue, or where do you think kind of the core of the issue is right now of the struggles that they've had?
I just think there's a lot of inconsistency on the defensive line. You know, we've heard all preseason training camp, we've heard nothing but great things about the D-line. And then when they put out their first depth chart, one thing that really stood out to me was, you know, you have Justin Belknap, you know, who's been a starter. You have Kylan Wilborn, who's been a starter. You have Fenton Connolly, who's also been a starter. So you had three guys who have had starting experience as your backup defensive line. I mean, there were 49 combined starts between those three, and they were backups. So I thought the depth on the D-line was going to be better. I didn't like what I saw out of Hawaii. And we saw the same old Arizona defense. We saw a lot of three-man rush. I mean, we saw a little bit more four-man rush. Very seldom do we see a five-man rush. But, you know, if I was Arizona's defensive coordinator and I was playing against Hawaii, I would have brought the house every single time because Cole McDonald was having a picnic in the pocket. You know, he was picking apart Arizona's defense because there was simply no pass rush. And, you know, it's not just Marcel Yates. You know, the defensive line, you know, a lot of the individual players didn't play to the level that I thought they'd be at. But, yeah, I think what the main issue with the defensive line is definitely that pass rush. And, quite frankly, I didn't like what I saw out of the safeties. I thought Scotty Young Jr. and Christian Young, I thought they had a very quiet game. You know, but both of those guys are going to be impact players this year. You know, they were impactful players last year. Scotty Young Jr. was even a great player the year before that as a freshman before, you know, he got some issues. So, you know, Arizona's defense, I think, is going to be in a good spot. But, man, Marcel Yates, he's got to be feeling pretty warm on his seat right now.
With you kind of mentioned now having to sit on this loss and have a bye. I feel like a bye could be a double-edged sword here where it's nice that you have plenty of time to kind of right the ship and get some things taken care of, but also you have to sit on that loss. What's the good, what's the bad with now having a week off before playing NAU?
The bad, you know, people are going to remember this Hawaii game until you get on the field. So right now, Arizona is a big disappointment. And when I say they got to sit on this L for the next couple weeks, I mean, they really just have to stew with the fact that they were favored by double digits on the road against Hawaii, and they lost by 7. That's the bad. The good, no offense to the Lumberjacks, but they play NAU. They play an FCS opponent that Arizona should beat pretty handily. And, yeah, I think that's the good. They'll, you know, start off the season 1-1. Going into the following week against not a big-time opponent, but it is an FBS opponent, and that is Texas Tech. So the good, you got NAU next. The bad, you got to stew on this loss for the next couple weeks.
With Khalil Tate, you kind of mentioned what he was able to do in that game. It felt like it was the closest we've seen under the Kevin Sumlin era of 2017 Khalil Tate. Just what differences did you see in his game versus what he was able to do last year?
Well, he was healthy, first and foremost. You know, last year he had the ankle injury he suffered against Houston, and we never saw Khalil Tate at 100%. He was hobbled the entire year. Arizona didn't get a bye week until the latter part of the season. So Khalil Tate was injured, and I had this feeling that he was pretty pressed, or, you know, he was pressured to, you know, to be the guy because he didn't want to sit out after having, you know, a great year like last year. And plus, people forget, last year he had all this buzz around him as being a possible Heisman candidate. So we didn't see Khalil Tate at 100% last year. So in 2017, we saw the legs of Khalil Tate. You saw Khalil Tate, the guy that won Pac-12 Player of the Week 4 weeks in a row in the month of October. That Khalil Tate also set a rushing record for a quarterback in a single game. That Khalil Tate, going into 2018 Khalil Tate, he kind of avoided the run game a little bit just because I think he wanted to polish off his passing because he wanted to prove himself as a pro prospect. And plus, when you have an offensive coordinator like Noel Mazzone, you got to be able to take care of business in the pocket. So last year, I think it was a combination of Khalil Tate being injured while also getting used to Noel Mazzone as offensive coordinator and running in his offense. Now this year, you combine everything together, and I think you're going to get the best version of Khalil Tate. We saw a glimpse of that Saturday night, and I wouldn't doubt that he has better games this season.
Another bright spot within the game was Jamari Joyner, who joined the receiving corps this offseason, was a quarterback at Cienega. I know you covered him extensively. Just what do you make of his prospects as a wide receiver moving forward in this offense?
How about that, man? You know, watching Jamari Joyner in high school, I always thought he was a quarterback. You know, he made some reads that not any normal high school quarterback would make. But he would also overthrow a lot of receivers. And I always told myself, you know, when he gets to the next level, those passes, they're going to stick. But at that time, Rod Smith was the quarterback's coach and the offensive coordinator for Arizona, because that's when Rich Rodriguez was here. Then there was a personnel change. And Noel Mazzone, the offensive coordinator, he brings in a quarterback out of Washington, D.C., Kevin Doyle. You know, he was a D.C. Gatorade Player of the Year. And then add him to the recruiting class. So there's two quarterbacks in Arizona's 2018 class. And then you go look at this past year's class. Noel Mazzone added, you know, four-star quarterback Grant Gunnell. And after, you know, the spring practice period, Jamari Joyner kind of saw himself falling down the depth chart a little bit. And I think he realized, man, I'm not going to get any playing time at quarterback, at least for the next couple of years. So you know what? I need to get on the field as soon as possible. I got to help out this team. And, you know, Jamari Joyner went and talked to his family. He went to Kevin Selman and Noel Mazzone, sat down with them and said, you know, I really want to make an impact. And they made the move to wide receiver. It's one thing for a quarterback to make a move for wide receiver if you're athletic, because you think, oh, you know, he knows where to line up, you know, this and that, yada, yada. But he looked so natural as a wide receiver from day one. And not only is he playing wide receiver, but he's also a backup punt returner, so he's going to be involved in Arizona special teams plan. You know, and the game against Hawaii showed why Jamari Joyner made the best decision possible. That was a career decision, and that could be a decision that gets him a spot in the NFL someday. So I liked what I saw out of Jamari Joyner, and I expect a big season out of him this year.
Transitioning from a former Southern Arizona high school football player to some current ones. Look, I've been on your show quite a few times over the past couple of months. We've talked plenty about the scene in Southern Arizona with the high school scene. We've talked a lot about who has jumped out to me. I want to know who's jumping out to you in the Tucson area that high school football fans should keep an eye on. Should the programs either come up to Phoenix or if they make the trek down to Tucson?
Well, I know, you know, Cienega is going to be another good team. Because, listen, we know South Point is the top team in Tucson. With the talent that they have, they're going to be a tough team to beat. But, you know, Cienega, while they do lose Terrell Hayward, a player that's going to be a standout at NAU, you know, they still have an impressive line. They have Hunter Schlegel, DiMaggio's Treve, Huskfeldt. You know, they just have really big, athletic offensive linemen that I think can really carry a team like Cienega this year. But outside of Cienega, even though we haven't seen them play this year, I'm expecting Walden Grove out of Sahuarita. You know, they're in 4A. They're not getting a lot of buzz because, you know, they're stashed all the way out there in Walden Grove. But they have a set of twins. One's a quarterback, one's a wide receiver. They're the Lopez twins, Jordan and Alex. Keep an eye on them this year. I mean, they're going to put up big-time numbers. And then Rick Avalar, who's a linebacker, he had 135 tackles last year. He led Southern Arizona. He's back for another season. So I like Walden Grove. And then, you know, out of the 3A side of things, I like Sabino a lot. A.J. Skaggs, he's their quarterback. You know, Sabino started off the season 0-2 last year. They put in A.J. Skaggs. A.J. Skaggs, you know, they win. Sabino wins 8 games in a row. They make the playoffs, and they finish off the season 8-2. Sabino, at the beginning of last year, looked like a train wreck. They looked like a big disaster. A.J. Skaggs came in, really took them to another level. And it's not just A.J. Skaggs. They also have a defensive end, tight end in Jason Petty, who's really talented. So, you know, there's a handful of teams that I think can make some noise in Southern Arizona this year.
Justin, we appreciate the time and the insight. I'm sure I'll see you on a sideline here shortly.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Jordan. Always appreciate you.
All right. That is Justin Spears, Arizona Daily Star, ESPN Tucson. Like I said, I think there are few as tapped in the sports scene in Southern Arizona, in the Tucson area, than Justin. And he works his butt off, logs a ton of hours. He's all over the place, you know, morning, noon, and night, juggling both of those jobs, and he does an exceptional job doing both of them. So great insight from him on where U of A is at, also a little bit of the high school scene as well. Coming up next, Luke Lipinski, Mike Jarecki talking Cardinals. That's coming up next on the Brad Sessmann Show.
All right, we're joined now by Cardinals digital content correspondent Mike Jarecki. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Luke. I'm looking forward to the season.
We're on the phone with Mike Jarecki, Cardinals digital content correspondent. Mike, let's start with Kyler Murray and the development and progression that you and the coaching staff, I guess, have seen so far throughout the preseason.
Well, I mean, I think it started in the offseason. You know, a lot of us got a chance to see it, including yourself, where, you know, you could see the quick release. And, you know, obviously Kingsbury, to me, is the head coach. He's the offensive coordinator. He's the, you know, the quarterback's coach, and he's the play caller. So, one-on-one coaching, and, you know, he picked up the system, obviously, because of his familiarity in the past. But I think he actually is getting the ball, getting out quicker. And even Brett Hundley, I can say, you know, since off-season workouts. So that's only going to help them. Obviously, the questions are going to come down to the offensive line.
How has the offense developed around him? Because there's been so much talk about how Kyler Murray might actually be more familiar with this offense than a lot of the vets on the team. Has that been an issue, or do you think that's been ironed out?
I think for the young guys, I mean, Christian Kirk played in the system, so I think he's fine. You know, Larry, you know, he spends a lot of time talking to Kyler, you know, before practice, after practice, during practice. So, you know, a lot of these guys have played in the spread offense, and I think that's what Michael Crabtree's going to benefit from. But, you know, I just feel like, you know, this team is chomping at the bit. They haven't showed anything coming out 2 and 3 tight end sets. We're not going to see that during the season. And now that they were able to break training camp and they're in the bubble, that's where really they're installing their new offense. And talking to players after practice, you can see how excited they are, because, you know, they're basically been vanilla, and then they were getting criticized because they, you know, weren't moving the football. And I thought, you know, at the end of the day, you don't want to show too much, but you have to win some one-on-one matchups, and I think they showed that against the Vikings.
With Michael Crabtree joining this receiving core, you know what you have in Larry Fitzgerald. We think we know what we have in Christian Kirk. Keyshawn Johnson has looked good. But where do you see Crabtree, maybe not in week one since he's still kind of learning everything, but by the middle point of the season, where do you see him slotting in with that group?
Well, I think initially, I mean, maybe 30, 35 snaps. He's got to get into football shape. It looked like he came in a little heavy, but just normal when you're not, you know, obviously just working out. So they're going to put him on a nutrition meal, and he'll obviously – start taking care of the body. But, you know, I think when it's all said and done, Luke, he could be 3 or 4. I think Trent Sherfield's, you know, one to the third position as the wide receiver. He plays on teams, you know, he told me he's going to play in this game, where coach told us earlier that the starters are going to rest. So we'll see him with Hundley. But if I had a link, you know, depending on how many they keep, I would go Fitz, Kirk, Sherfield, Crabtree, Johnson, and then you start looking at Isabella, and then Demir Bird, and I would put Farrell Cooper in there. Now, Bird is eligible for the practice spot, so we'll see what happens there.
As far as the running game, I mean, everybody wants to see 2016 David Johnson, and maybe that's not realistic, but he can still be effective even if he isn't at that elite level. Where do you see him slotting in with this new offense and everything?
Well, I mean, it's his fifth year. I mean, they went out and rewarded him with a nice contract. I mean, it's time for him to, you know, get back to where he was in 2016. I don't like the fumbles we talked about on the postgame show. After the third preseason game, he's had 14 of those. So I'm not saying that's a concern, but ball security has to be an issue if he's going to, you know, carry the rock a lot. I think he'll be involved in the passing game. If I had a guess, I would think Larry, Kirk, and David will lead this team in touches and targets. But I do think when you look at the offensive line on paper, I think they're better run blockers than they are in pass protection, where he's going to try to cover up some of that stuff. So I anticipate him and Chase Edmonds will be used at the same time. But clearly, he had a down year last year, you know, close to 1,400 yards. But we want to see him around, you know, maybe 15 to 1,800 yards, and then maybe, you know, 14 to 16 touchdowns. And the idea is to try to get a lead and then pound that ball in the fourth quarter, because, you know, when you get a 100-yard rusher, you're successful on game day versus a 100-yard receiver or a 300-yard passer. But we all know the league is set up by passing. But if you can get the lead, then I think we're going to see the worthy of him get a long contract.
On the defensive side of the football, with the suspension of Patrick Peterson and the injury to Robert Alford, you know, it's obviously going to be an issue to start the year in the secondary. You still have Buda Baker. You still have some pieces back there. But how concerned are they that they may get exposed in the secondary in those first couple weeks?
Well, I mean, we talked to Vance Joseph last week, and he's never gone into the season losing two cornerbacks. So, obviously, you know, Byron Murphy's going to get a throw in the fire. I know that he started in the inside and he put him on the outside. Jermaine Brock has experience. And then Chris Jones really hasn't done it, but he's got really good size. And then we'll just have to wait and see, you know, what they decided with the waiver wire. But, you know, they're going to have to somehow create pressure. Now, they haven't come out and said this. Are we going to see more? Because, you know, maybe these guys aren't built for man-to-man when you have Alford and Peterson out there. So, you know, maybe Buda Baker plays in the box a little bit more. I think they want Murray to play in the slot so they can hide him a little bit. But I think athletically, down the road, he can play on the outside. But if they can generate some pass rush and obviously try to, you know, shut the run game down, I like what they've done with the depth at defense alignment. But, you know, you look at the roster, Luke, they have needs D-line. And right now they probably got six, and we'll see if they keep seven. They need help at outside linebacker behind Jones, Suggs, and Reed. And then you would think they need another corner or safety, even though Deontay and Jalen Thompson have looked well. But there's definitely a lot of concerns on defense. And, you know, obviously on paper you got some game players, but this defense is going to have to come together. Otherwise the Cardinals could be in some shootouts.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of talk about the physicality after that Raiders game, and obviously it kind of went away after the Minnesota preseason game. It feels weird to be concerned about physicality when you have a guy like Chandler Jones or Terrell Suggs on defense. Is that something they feel like is going to go away once week one hits?
State Farm. I'll be honest, my biggest concern going to the Lions game is they had two joint practices. I don't think you could have done it as a first-year head coach. So I think next year the Cardinals, when the preseason schedule comes out, they'll be able to sync up with someone. I think it's more beneficial. I can put my number one wide receiver on your number one corner. You may not get that in the preseason. So, you know, the thing is, though, if somehow Murray can cover up some of those blemishes, but, you know, the physicality part is, you know, the want to. But I look at the Lions, and they went out and got Mike Daniels, and they've been physical throughout training camp and in the preseason and joint practices. But I think if you look at their secondary, and they lost a couple of players on Saturday, if you can spread them out, Darius Slade is their best player. So I would think the Cardinals would have an advantage. But ultimately, you know, Matthew Stafford can throw it around. It seems like they want to run the football more. So we'll see how physical they are. But, you know, you don't want to be known as a finesse team, because teams are obviously going to try to bring it and get that quarterback off the spot.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mike.
Anytime. Thank you.